taste of a piece of music called As Small Birds Play by the Sydney composer Corinna Bonshek. Well, on this Nature Theme program of Books and Arts, it's now a great pleasure to welcome the Queensland writer Inga Simpson. She's an expert on the history of nature writing in Australia, and she just published her latest novel, which is a very vivid and moving story called Where the Trees Were. Inga, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Michael.
So nice to have you here. So you live in the hinterland of Queensland's Sunshine Coast. Can you tell us about where you live? It sounds like a lovely spot.
It is a lovely spot. It's between the coast and the Black Hole Range, so just down from Montville and kind of the foothills, I guess, in what was once cedar-getting country.
Yeah.
The spot where I live is named for a chute that by which all the cedar trees were cut and sent tumbling down from the mountains.
Oh, I know exactly where you are. There are quite a few places called so-and-so chute, aren't there, around where you are?
Exactly.
So yeah. So these were timber chutes where the timber was sent, what, with water, was it? Were they a kind of...
On wooden tracks, just using gravity, yeah, sort of clearing a patch through the forest and laying timber tracks and sort of sliding them down.
Imagine the noise.
Yeah.
Must have been incredible. Now, you've just submitted a PhD on nature writing and its history and what it means to be in Australia. What zone of nature writing are we talking about? Where is your focus? Where does nature writing start for you?
I don't know about a zone, and I very ambitiously tried to tackle the sort of a complete history of Australian nature writing from, first arrivals. Explorers.
So the
right
first
through
the
to
first,
present day.
Oh, I see.
I think the explorers' journals were the first descriptions, written descriptions, obviously, by Europeans.
And who are your favourite explorer writers? Who do you reckon stands out as really evocative?
I really rate Leichhardt. I think he was an amazing naturalist, but also a very beautiful and descriptive writer and very thoughtful too. So I begin with him in my thesis.
What about Major Mitchell?
Yeah, I probably am not as familiar with his journals, but him too, of course.
Now, the explorers are doing their thing at the very time that the English Romantics are at the height of their project. And it strikes me that, they're moving in different directions because the Romantics, Wordsworth in particular, I suppose, are looking for a retreat from the Industrial Revolution into the natural world, whereas the explorers are looking at the natural world with a view to how it might be brought into the realm of, British civilization, as it was called.
That's right. The colonisation, that process of colonisation and exploration of new lands for their use, really shaped nature writing's emergence in Australia and the other colonised nations as well.
So, my own feeling is that the Romantic movement pretty much gets skipped in Australia because while it's on in England, the needs of the imagination in Australia are different among Australian settlers,
Yeah, that's right, Michael, and that's why Australian nature writing developed, one of the reasons why Australian nature writing developed very differently from the American tradition. As you say, we kind of skipped that romantic view here.
Whereas the Americans, what you're saying is the Americans are ready, as the English are, for a return to wildness, aren't they? That rediscovery of nature as a place of solace and escape is available to the Americans, less so to Australia. Is that your view?
Yeah, partly because of, as you say, the point in history at which America was colonised. But also the nature of the flora and fauna was more amenable to that because it was very similar in many ways to that of Europe and easily adapted to that romantic tradition. Whereas in Australia, the early settlers found the flora and fauna very odd and, even some of the environments very hostile to their attempts to make a living and make a home.
So, yeah, well, it's so dry. Just for starters.
Yeah, in many places, yeah.
Right. Yeah, not where you are, but it can get very dry. Can we talk very briefly, Inga, about your lovely novel? Because we've only got 5 minutes together here. This is called Where the Trees Were, and I read it over the weekend, and I just love this book, Inga. So let's just tell the listener so briefly what you've done. You've got a group of kids, one of whom is Jane, who turns out to be your central character, who love to play on Jane's family farm in the Lachlan Valley. This is a farming district in New South Wales, which is in the heart of Wiradjuri country. Just tell us about the place where they play.
It's a sort of a creek off a off the Lachlan River, in the Lachlan Valley, central west New South Wales. These kids, their property is all adjoined, but only Jane's property has access, direct access to the river. So there's a bit of a swimming hole, a bit of a rough beach, a spot where they chuck a lilo in and go floating down the river in summer and blackberrying later in the season and so on. So it's a place where they all get together, where they're sort of out of time in a sense.
And they have, yeah, they have a kind of ideal sort of adolescence there, really. It's the adolescence we'd all love to have had. And up there on the bank, just I guess it's sort of behind them, there are some trees.
That's right. It's like most pastoral landscapes in Australia, the trees are sort of clinging along fence lines and rivers and so on. So there's a wooded area along the river bank. But one of the kids, Kieran, goes off on his own. He gets impatient with the others and goes off on his own, and he finds a special grove of trees that have, they don't know it then, but they sense that their importance. There's elaborate carvings on the trees, and they recognise that it's a significant place, and they think that they've discovered it.
Yeah, they think they've discovered it. And one of the kids is a guy called Ian, who has Aboriginal heritage, and he becomes interested in his heritage because these are the artifacts of the Wiradjuri people. Can you tell us about them? Because I didn't know about these, but they're known by anthropologists, I guess. I don't know what scientists came up with this word, but they're known to the experts as arbor glyphs.
Yeah, I mean, they're certainly known to the Wiradjuri people as well.
But they don't call them arbor glyphs, presumably, do they? The Wiradjuri?
No.
They would have some.
No. Yeah. They're a burial tree. The carvings sort of celebrate the life of a significant male elder, and this is my understanding anyway. And in some way, those, you know, they're somewhere between the glyphs, I guess, they're somewhere between a story and art, and also show that man's way to the dream time. So very important pieces and significant sites, and yeah, there'll be a burial spot marked by that tree, or often, as in my story, a grove of trees.
Mm. Listener, if you just Google this, arbor glyph, just look for that word on Google Images, and you'll find some stunning photographs taken, I guess, in the 19th century, late 19th century, of these just amazing trees from central New South Wales. Now, I think we can reveal the key incident in your novel, Inga, because this is in the late 80s or early 90s. Jane's father decides to knock these trees down. Why does he do that?
Yeah, that is kind of a spoiler, but this is the era of Mabo and the murmurings of native title. And so, you know, and I grew up during that time.
Yeah.
There was a lot of nervousness from landholders about what that might mean. And there were deliberate, you know, actions taken to remove any evidence of prior occupation by traditional owners from farmers'
land. I did research in this area, in the Wiradjuri country, in the early 90s, and I met several farmers who told me that they had bulldozed Aboriginal ovens and Aboriginal ceremonial sites because they were afraid of native title claims over their land and they weren't going to have it. And they were sorry they'd done it. They said, but, you know, it's a hard world. I spoke to two or three people who told me they had done this. So you came across this as well.
Yeah, certainly within my experience, yes, and many stories of similar things, particularly ovens, as you say, which were easily ploughed in, sadly.
Mm.
Yeah, but this was certainly the case with the burial trees as well. I've seen some footage of them being bulldozed into piles and burned.
Yeah. Well, I'm so pleased that you've documented this, because it's always played on my conscience that I encountered that story and I didn't know what to do with it. Now, Inga, what I think you've done amazingly in this book is that you've given settler Australians an account of nature a way of relating to nature that feels deeply grounded in both farming practice and also in Aboriginal tradition, without feeling as though you've appropriated anyone else's story. You've just created an image of nature as it can be experienced by anyone who lives in Australia and knows what they're looking at in a country that has a tradition that is 60,000 years old. Was that your project? Was that why you set out to write this lovely book?
One of the reasons, and certainly what I hoped to achieve, that kind of inclusiveness and hopefully opening up a conversation and other ways forward for thinking about, you know, the Australian landscape and the histories, all of the histories of the places where we live. One of the big concerns of Australian nature writing has been just that. You know, a lot of the writers express this kind of conflict, as did the poet Judith Wright, of, you know, feeling this, how to talk about, how to write about connection of to place, to these Australian landscapes where we live, where we've grown up, whilst being conscious of, you know, how we came to be in those places, that it's involved the dispossession of the traditional owners. And, you know, these are issues that are yet to be satisfactorily resolved.
Yes. So there is a politics to your novel.
There is, yeah. I mean, nature writing too is very political, isn't it? So there's the background to it. I mean, you know, I always try and put the story first. But of course, always thinking about what's going on in those landscapes.
Well, the clever thing you've done to put the story first is that we now meet Jane as a grown-up working in a museum and she decides to take political action to restore the wrong done by her father back in the day. So the device works for you very, very well. I love this novel, Inga, and thank you so much for coming on board to tell us about it. Congratulations on it.
Oh, thanks, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Inga Simpson is a nature writer. She was speaking to us there from Brisbane, and her new novel is called Where the Trees Were, and it's published by Hachette. And as I say, it's a really intelligent and quite melancholy tale, which takes us deep into a way of respecting and participating in an Aboriginal sense of country. When I say we, it's a problem saying we, isn't it? In settler Australians, I guess, in participating in perhaps a more Aboriginal way of being in this land. This is Books and Arts on RN. I'm Michael Cathcart.